I spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest star
two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song's Second Chance Theater, where we recover a topic but with a new guest. I'm your host, John. With me today is a returning guest. He is a fellow podcaster. He's been on a bunch of times. It's Dustin Holden, everyone. Woo! Woo!
That's my audience. That's my audience. They live in my mouth. I know it sounds bad, but it's still funny. It's the truth.
Dustin, how are you?
I'm doing okay, obviously. I'm all right.
That's good. And we're doing here good. And we're here today to recover Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode Once More with Feeling. Previously, it was episode number 20 with guest Anthony Colon. And now we're here today to, I don't know, revisit it. So, are you a Buffy fan, first of all?
Yeah, I watched it since the first night it premiered on the WB.
Wow. Have you done it on your podcast?
Select episodes, random episodes. So we did four this past October. We did the episode that comes after this, actually, is one of them, Tabula Rasa. And yeah, we did just four from the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth season. We did one from each.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So why did you want to cover this episode, the Once More with Feeling?
Well, because it's like, pretty much, it's one of the favorite episodes of everybody. It's, of course, my favorite episode. I was so looking forward to it, you know, because this was the season where, like, okay, so the season before, Buffy had died. And,
yes.
And it was like, oh, my gosh. And basically, they killed her off of the WB, and she was resurrected on UPN. And
I never thought of it. Like, I knew about it, but I never really thought of it in those exact words until you just said it.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Because it was really cool at that era, because it was like, I was a big Buffy fan. And even in Memphis, where I am from, we had billboards. We didn't used to have billboards for like TV shows in Memphis. We just didn't. We just never had them. We might have had a little poster at a bus stop, but that's about it. But I looked up and all I see is this big red poster with Sarah Michelle Gellar's eyes. And it says, you know, Buffy lives. Coming whatever for the premiere of this season, of the sixth season. I was like, oh, I knew it was coming, but I was still like so excited, like gave me goosebumps. And then so there was that, you know, the whole resurrection thing. And then a few episodes down the road, you get that musical episode. It's like, hell yeah. And it was like one of the very first musical episodes of any TV show.
For, you know what, like, I mean? In like 20 years.
Well, it's, you know what I mean? Like of any like serialized TV show where it was like there's a reason for it to be, not like, hey, we're gonna put on a talent show and so therefore it's the musical episode. It's not like I'm doing the school play and therefore it's the musical episode. It's just literally original songs written for the show, so it was a musical. So that's what I loved about it.
Well, and I'm saying because of Cop Rock, an 80s show that I've done on this podcast.
Let me rephrase. Successful. Musical, well, television episode.
What's fascinating, unfortunately you didn't get a chance because life happens, to listen to the first chance of this, but I said in there that Joss Whedon wanted to do a musical episode since season one.
Yeah.
Or like not season one, but like earlier. And I don't know, I feel like watching this episode with that in mind this time around, I was like, no, this is like the perfect time, because I feel like season five still would have been a little too soon for a musical episode. I don't know.
Yeah, especially with the cast that, you know, because they had a lot of stuff they were dealing with in season five. It really wouldn't have been a good, like, as far as like, how would you put that in? You know, how would you put that in? How would it? This season was a great explanation because everything had gone awry and nothing made sense in season six.
Yes,
you know, Buffy's all depressed, Willow's starting to get addicted to magic, Xander and Anya are kind of teeter-tottering, or maybe not, you know, but it's like, you didn't know because it's like they both kind of seemed, you know, and then you had Dawn finally, who was not a key anymore, but now she's just a troubled teen and she's stealing, you know, you got all this stuff going. It's like, all right, this I dropped my mic. You know, so you have all these things going on. It's perfect way to make it happen. It made the notion of why it's a musical make sense. And any other season, it probably wouldn't have made any sense. It would have felt really hokey.
Yes, and I feel like with everything that's happened in the last five seasons of the show, up until this point, like, this is like a good emotional climax to then be like what the bare minimum of what a musical is, where it's like you have all this emotion that like you need to sing and dance it out. It's you can't just say it. You have to sing it.
And thank God it happened after David Boreanaz left. Because could you imagine just him as Angel trying to bust out in a musical number?
Although I would have loved to see Cordelia. Charisma Carpenter.
Yeah, that would have been fun. Yeah. Well, she would have been like the Anya. She would have been in place of Anya, most likely. You know what I mean? Like, that would have probably been what she
did. I don't know. I feel like the genre of songs were picked specifically for the character type, not the voice type. And so Anya, in this point, she's like better at being a human in the show, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, she's got a little firmer grasp on what it is to be human. And the fact that they were inspired by a very specific Gene Kelly song for I'll Never Tell.
Yeah,
I was looking this up earlier on IMDb. It's a song from the movie Les Girls called You're Just Too Too, T-O-O-T-O-O, because Anya says, look, I'm dancing crazy. And that's something that is in that song.
Okay.
So it kind of makes sense. And they're kind of like,
I mean, and there's other parts that, like, even Anya's part where she comes in, I've got a theory, it could be bunnies, and she does that whole bunnies,
yeah,
goes into that rock out thing. That was because of Emma Caulfield, because she used to go up to Joss Whedon on set and just be like, Joss Whedon! And just start singing to him just randomly. And I'm like, I would like to hang out with her because I do that kind of crap all the time. Just no reason just to go up and like, what's up? You know, and like, Johnny! I would have been like singing to you, you know. And I think that would have been a lot of fun to meet her. And I was like, yeah, I want to be Anya. I think I am Anya, actually.
So watching this, I did a little bit more of a deep dive. Not really. I just went onto IMDb and Wikipedia just to see things. Because I was wondering if Amber Benson and Emma Caulfield did like other musical things, because they are definitely the strongest singers out of the bunch, with Anthony Head being clumped in with them. And I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find like if they put out an album at this time, because this was also like around the same time period where younger actors were also like, let me try being a singer as well to like propel their careers.
It was like the start of that era, yeah, for sure.
Or sometimes it was the reverse, where young singers were trying to be actors. Hello, Mandy Moore.
Right. Aaliyah shows up.
Aaliyah, yeah.
Was it Aaliyah? Well, Aaliyah did do that, but no, it was Ashanti. She shows up in season 7 on, so.
Yes. Oh, yeah, but Aaliyah also did the acting career.
Yeah.
Outside of Buffy. But I think if Charisma Carpenter were still in this, I feel like she would have been more of like a Britney Spears kind of.
Oh my God. Yes. It's the exact name I was thinking of. It would have been majorly pop starlet of the time. Yeah, yes. Totally.
Yeah.
Or at least tried to be. And she would have been like, I'm going to sing my song, but she's actually talking it. I don't know if she can sing or not. I mean, she might.
Or she could have taken the Allison Hannigan route and was like, I'll give you a line. That's it.
Yeah.
Put me in group numbers so you can mix my voice with other people. But I'll take a line if you need me to have a solo somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Oh, I forgot. Yeah. You asked me earlier, it's like, how big of a fan are you of Buffy or in this episode? And I have here the album for Once More with Feeling. I got it. It's from Mondo Records. They had a limited edition they came out with. It's got
I have that album.
You bought the album?
I have that exact album,
With the sleigh bill in it. It's and
over there somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't want to get up right now.
I pre-ordered it, so I wanted to make sure I got it.
I got that album like a few years ago, yeah.
Yeah, it came out a few years ago. And I used to have the actual script book with the song book attached. It came out.
I don't know.
And somebody borrowed it and destroyed it. And then never told me. And then I saw it and I went, and then they're like, yeah, you want it back? And I was like, I want my original version back. And they're like, we're not. I'm like,
and then you murdered them and buried their body in the backyard.
I wanted to for sure. I really did. I just, you don't do that. You don't borrow stuff from people, destroy it, and then not replace it, if anything, you know?
Or be like, at least be apologetic about it.
Yeah, they didn't care. Rude. I didn't care.
I do want to make a retraction from the first chance. There's an IMDb fact that I realized is incorrect. It says that the two vampires and demon at the beginning are the same, or the dan, are
the dancers,
street sweepers in that one scene where Giles, Anya, and Xander are walking through and they're seeing the town and everything. And I said, because I read it off the IMDb, that they are doing the same choreography. They are not by any means doing the same choreography.
Yeah, and I don't think they're the sweet streepers. They are the henchmen. The sweet streepers are the henchmen.
But are they also the vampires and demon in the beginning?
I don't think so. They might be. It's possible. But I know for sure that the henchmen for sweet, the bad guy, is the same as the street sweepers. But,
And I did read that Adam Shankman and who's the assistant choreographer? I read this too. They are the dancing couple in that like happened right before the street sweepers.
Okay.
Adam Shankman was and Fletcher. Adam Shankman was the choreographer for the episode.
Okay.
He did a few movies as well as like a director choreographer. I believe he do the Hocus Pocus movie? Yes.
No, he didn't.
No.
Well, he might have directed or done the choreography, but he didn't direct it. That was the first Hocus Pocus movie anyway. That was Kenny Ortega.
No, I mean the sequel.
Oh, he might have. I don't know.
I know he worked on the Hairspray movie.
Mm-hmm. I know the name. I just don't remember everything he's worked on. So.
Yeah, no, he also directed Disenchanted, the Enchanted sequel.
Yeah, which was okay. It was just okay. It really wasn't needed.
So while watching this, I realized I've seen this so many times before. I've binged the show. This is the second chance of us doing this on this. I still don't understand what is Sweet's deal, the demon. He wants a bride, but is that it?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, break it down. So he is a demon who can make people sing their emotions and feelings until they get really emotional and they spontaneously combust.
Yes.
Okay. So that's the breakdown of it.
That's in his song, What You Feel.
Right. So, I mean, and that's just basically what he does. So that's, you know, I mean, obviously certain demons have certain powers. They're, you know, and those could be the evil ones. He's obviously somewhat evil, or at least morally compromised, because, you know, he's killing people. So, you know, he's pretty much evil, and he's okay with it. He's totally fine with it.
But like Buffy says that she can't kill him, and I'm like, why? It was never discussed that you can't kill him. Usually there's that whole, like, I feel like in the show a whole research moment.
So, okay. She doesn't say she can't kill him. It's kind of like she dropped the if. It's like, if I can't kill you, you take me to Hellsville in her place.
Oh,
she's saying, but you don't hear the if. She just says, I can't kill you, you take me to Hellsville in her place. Like, that's the deal. If I can't kill you, that's what that was.
Okay.
So he's from a hell dimension, of course, But the thing that bothers me is that we never actually hear his name being said throughout the entire episode. But we know his name is Sweet.
He says that he's gone by different names. And it's like, okay,
well,
but...
Well, can you tell us one of them right now, please? Like,
I also realized during What You Feel, I may have accidentally gotten the title of this podcast from that song.
Oh, yeah.
He sings, "Life is but a song." And I'm like,
that's what? A long, but there's also "Life's but a song, you'll get along." There's a different song.
No, no, I mean the actual title. Like, okay. This podcast is called "Life's."
You
but
think
a song.
You were inspired by it?
I think I was inspired by that because I believe me. Like, I know it's like also a common phrase where it's like "Life's but a song," you know, whatever. Stop and smell the roses, but I don't know if I got it from this episode or if I just got it from life. So. I'm gonna say I got it from the Buffy episode.
Okay, we can go with that. That's fine.
But yeah, I just had a lot of... I was like, I don't understand your whole deal. I understand, like, you have to leave because we're not focusing on you. You're just a monster of the week. But why do you all of a sudden are just like, I'm not gonna take Xander. I'm gonna go. Because I feel like they...
I don't like homophobic demon much. My God. Like...
Yeah. And also like his design, I didn't understand. I've also watched a shit ton of Face Off, the makeup competition show that Sci-Fi had. And I just have blazed in my head, you know, the judges being like, I don't understand the physiology. Like, why does he look like this? So I was like, why does Sweet look like this?
Why does he have a twig coming out of his chin? Like,
yeah. Why is he wearing
why is it rubber? Because he hits it with his finger when he kind of does this, and it kind of like he waves his hand in front of his face and he hits it and it kind of moves. I'm like, that is so clearly rubber.
And it's also bent. And I'm like, do you have a dick chin, sir? Is that
I'm
a
like,
dick?
Dude, is that how you get off? You just plow with your chin.
I also want to know why that demon in the opening pairs with vampires.
Well, they were making a deal, it looked like, in the...
With the Fabio-esque guy.
Yeah, like, or no, they were like going to sacrifice him, and maybe the demon was the head of it, and he just had some minion vampires he was paying to do. I mean, that's how the world works in this show, so... I mean, in season 6, it got crazy with the goofy vampire demon type characters. There was underground stuff we started seeing more. They were acting like they were just kind of like living life, you know. We met Clem for the first time in season 6. Clem was the skin one with the saggy skin. That was the first time we met him.
I could have sworn he was in season 5. When did they do the poker game? Is that season 6?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay.
Because Spike is trying to get Buffy out of her funk and takes her around, like, all right, let's go and do this. And so she's like, you play for kittens? You know, that whole thing shows up. But yeah, it goes on further. That's where you first meet Clem, and you don't see him again for a little while, and you see him again, you know. I love Clem.
For season 5, there was Glory was the big bad, but season 6 didn't really have a big overarching villain, like a physical villain.
Right. It wasn't like a demon or a witch or well, until the very end. But we got the trio who were just a menace and they were just antagonistic.
I don't think Dark Willow is even the villain. I just think that
she became the finale's big bad, like the last few episodes' big bad of the season. That was it.
Right. But I think the big bad of the season is just life.
Yeah, you know, it's totally, yeah. That's what the show is about. It's a big metaphor for life in general. But
like, now it's adulthood, where
mm-hmm. Now you're on your own type of thing.
Yeah, because... Yeah.
Quarter-life crisis type stuff.
Because I guess they didn't want to have Buffy graduate college, because they were like, we already did the graduation thing. She now needs to be
And it genuinely makes more sense that she didn't. She's too preoccupied with saving the world. There's no way, you know, and they showed that in season 4 when she was in college. She was always missing classes and stuff, and it's like, yeah, she can't do this.
Right. At least for season 5, it was the healthy it was like a little bit of a healthy balance between, you know, her mortal life and her slayer life.
But it was showing that there was a shift. There was a shift coming, and there was a big tipping point, especially when her mom died in season five. So, yeah,
don't make me cry again.
No, trust me. I watched it again like recently, and knowing that I lost my mom last year, and I watched this because I've rewatched Buffy a lot, but I mainly when I rewatch it, I usually stick to the first four seasons, and I just kind of stop. And so I was like, you know what? From here on, I'm going to go from season five to the end because I have not rewatched this as much. It's been a while. So I went back and I was like, yeah, okay, this all makes more sense now. You know, and I watched I'm going to watch it. I'm going to go ahead and watch The Body. It's going to bother the hell out of me, but I'm going to watch it. And I cried and boo-hooed and whatnot. And it was, you know, it was fine. I was okay.
It is the best episode of television, hands down.
It is one of the best written things ever. It's just so well done, you know? They, you know, I have to hand it to him. You know, we don't like Joss Whedon nowadays, but I got to hand it to his writing. He did some great creating and writing for these shows. So
I'm going to chalk that one up to Marty Nixon.
Marty Nixon, yeah.
Marty Nixon, that's it. Marty Nixon is a singer that pops up on this, but Marty Nixon, I don't know if she wrote that episode, but I'm going to say that she did. We're going to rewrite
okay.
history.
Okay.
But let me lie to myself.
yeah, you do that. You go for it.
Okay. I think without this, we wouldn't have had Glee. And I'm going to make that very strong statement.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
We wouldn't have had a lot of these shows that started doing musical episodes in general. And even original music. Like, we wouldn't have had, like...
We wouldn't have had the Scrubs episode.
Hell, we wouldn't have had iCarly and Victorious.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was before Glee, I think. Pretty sure. Weren't they? Were they before Glee? I'm pretty sure they were.
I don't remember. But, they,
but anyway.
There's a lot of these crossover things that we're talking about that, like, I'm going to be bold and just say that, yeah, we wouldn't have had a lot of future properties without the success of this.
Right.
And like,
I will say that Glee, though, made it to where a show could be a musical all the way through.
Yes.
So, I mean, the whole musical episode thing definitely got a hand out to Buffy. But for Glee, was the first show to make a musical series that lasted and was strong enough for a while, you know? And then we get things like, you know, Grease, Rise of the Pink Ladies, which
Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, which also sadly didn't make it.
At least they got two seasons out of it, and they got a closed out movie they could end on. So, but yeah, you got to hand it to this episode because it really did inspire a lot of musical TV going forward. So,
did you take notes on this? What are some things that you wanted to bring up and talk about further?
Well, I mean, I just have, you know, I mean, I love all the episodes. I mean, all the songs in this, every single one, every single bit. It's all, I love how it, like you said, it pulls from different genres for each, you know, either each character or each actor, you know, how they can perform and whatnot. And it does a good job of making it all feel cohesive because, you know, it's all written by the same people. So they, you know, you're going to have, you know, when somebody composes something, they always have a certain sound or they have like a certain type of beat they go with or certain so many notes they use over and over. You know, you think of John Williams, you think of, you know, Danny Elfman, you think of, you know, everybody has their sound and you're like, this sounds like John Williams. So this, I guess, had a sound to it altogether. But even though each song was different, it still had this like cohesiveness. It had a feeling that this all worked, you know, it all made sense. It all, you know, just blended well together. You had the humor in each song as well. Each song had humor. And I love that because it stuck with the comic bookiness of Buffy, you know? And it made it something that, like, we wanted to buy the freaking album for, you know?
I have
the CD. I have it on, I downloaded the digital and I have a physical, you know, record.
Same. Like, I remember going to the music, I think it was like FYE, and getting the CD. And I recently bought it, like, and I say recently, it could have been like 5 years ago. I don't know at this point. But like, I bought the digital version because like something happened and I needed to get the digital version. And I bought the record because I was like, ooh, collector edition. But
I mean, you know what I found? I found in my old, because I moved last year, so packed up a lot of stuff, and I found a bunch of old VHS tapes. Found the original recording from the night. I don't know if it was the night it premiered or if it was like the few nights later when they re-aired it. Probably the few nights later, but still, that same week that it came out, I had that recorded off of TV.
With the commercials?
Yes. I had that with my so-called life on MTV.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I have a bunch of stuff like that. I still have them. I was like, I'm keeping this crap. I have a VCR. I could totally watch it if I want to.
I feel like, because you said you watched the show from the get.
Yeah.
I feel like when they switched over, something happened where I couldn't watch it. And back in these days, kids, we didn't have Hulu or any streaming service that it can go on to the next day or something.
Right.
So if you didn't watch it, you stopped watching. You didn't watch it. You didn't see it.
You had to wait for it to rerun either in the summer or hopefully show up on like TBS or TNT or something. Yeah.
Right. So I think I actually like, I feel like this was either I watched up until this point and then I just fell off because life happened, or I remember like hearing about this and I'm like, what? Yeah. Buffy musical episode. We need to watch this. So
yeah, that happened to me in season 5. I ended up in the hospital around that time, and I missed a lot of episodes. It's like, good thing they did have reruns at the time still, so I was able to catch up.
Oh, nice. This is still even like a little before TiVo.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
No,
TiVo was around. It wasn't as popular, but right. They did have DVR.
They did have DVR, and you did have your VHS that you could set up like a recording if you wanted to, but it had to be like, you had to make sure everything was in place.
Oh my God.
It could've...
Or at least somebody was there to hit record at a certain time. Yeah.
No, I remember having a VHS player where you could schedule it, but like you needed to have the tape.
Could figure it out on a I don't know what it was about VCRs. It was like setting the clock or doing stuff like that, like trying to time a recording. It never worked for me. I followed every instruction to a T, and somehow it still messed up. So I was like, I just don't trust this. Somebody just hit record, please. Or I'd leave the house if I knew something was coming on a certain time. I'd have to have like a tape that was so long, had so much space on it, so I could record it and then fast forward hours through to get to that one thing I want, like a soap opera, like Passions or something would come on. And because I watched Passions the day it started too. So,
my God.
But yeah, so, and it was, you know,
I'm surprised they didn't have a musical episode, or did they?
They might have. It was on for a few years. It probably did at some point.
Cause I mean, like I said earlier, like the success of this, then other shows were like, well, let's do it. You know, we saw Joss do it. We can do it. And then I guess it got like people started getting more and more bold about being like, okay, now let's do a musical show. Let's do a jukebox musical episode. Let's do this. Let's do that. So like, this was, and like, this is a huge undertaking because I still feel like this is the most songs in a episode I've covered.
It is a lot of songs, actually, when you think about it. I mean, there's a lot of music. I mean, not everything's a song, but for the most, or even that long, but there's still a lot for an episode.
Yeah, and like it doesn't feel like a lot.
And this was pretty much the longest episode of Buffy, though, too, because when it premiered as like an hour and 10 or hour and 15 minutes.
Right, but like
on live with commercials. So
it feels though like, yes, there's a lot, and yes, they plow, like there are still some book scenes where there is no music. But it feels natural. Like, it doesn't feel forced. Like, when Spike sings Rest in Peace, it doesn't... The mustard and the parking ticket feel like they're world-building, and they still feel like they are needed, even though they're a punchline. Like,
needed it to show that it wasn't just our core group. It was the entire... town.
Just speaking on pure speculation here, because the episode doesn't give us a lot of information about a lot of things. It's just like, we're doing a musical deal, bitches. But I was while I was watching this, I was like, do you think that the Scoobies know that they're in a musical because of their ties to the Hellmouth and witchcraft and all the supernaturalness, or do you feel like the rest of Sunnydale knows that they're in a musical, that they're spontaneously singing?
So, okay, so yeah, definitely the Scoobies know, obviously, but the rest of Sunnydale. So it's always been the explanation every single time I've seen or read anything from Buffy that it's all about the people of Sunnydale not wanting to believe the things that are happening in town, even though there's no denying that stuff happens in town constantly. And it's like they even say it in the prom episode. Like, there's no stranger that our town isn't like anybody else's.
Right, they list some of the things that happen, the hyenas and other things, yeah.
Right, they choose to not believe, kind of thing. They want to believe they live in that, or they give themselves like, that was just, you know, PCP, you know, like they say in one of the episodes, PCP, they're on PCP, you know, or something else. Oh, somebody drugged the water, or, you know, or they were wearing masks or something like that. They always do that when they try to explain something. And that happens even in the books and stuff I'm reading today. Like, I read there's a spinoff out now. It's a YA book, and it's called In Every Generation. And it's takes place today, and it's Willow's daughter, and she's been called to be a Slayer.
That's awesome.
Well, that's the whole explanation for why, and it's really good, and like it's a good story, and I feel like it could be an actual, if they wanted to reboot the Buffyverse, but have it take place in Sunnydale and everything, have some of the same actors and stuff reprise their roles. This book actually was written, it seems like it was written for that purpose, because it makes a lot of sense. So I highly recommend that. It's by Kendara Blake.
Okay. And it's sanctioned and everything?
Yeah, there's two books out so far. And it's called Buffy the Next Generation, the book series is. But the first one's In Every Generation, and the second one is One Girl in All the World.
There's also a...
And they came out with comics. Not, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not sponsored by this by any means. But there was an Audible thing recently.
Mm-hmm.
Where
it was another spinoff, yeah.
Where they got a lot of the actors to read.
Yeah, it was called Slayers, and it was written by Amber Benson and Christopher Golden. Christopher Golden wrote a lot of the Buffy books and the Watcher's Guide and the Angel Files and all those like guiding books, companion books. So she got with Christopher Golden, was like, "Hey, let's make this." And
where it's a podcast or radio drama kind of?
It's like a radio drama. I listened to it. It's like got six or I can't remember. I think it's 6 to 8 episodes, and they're about the length of a regular Buffy episode. And when you're listening to it, it's kind of that like surround sound where it sounds like they're running behind you and around you and stuff. If you have your headphones on, they do a really good job to where you know what's going on. You could close your eyes and you can almost see it type of thing. They do a really good job. And it's about alternate universe versions of these characters, like our universe of Spike, our version of Spike and Clem and another Slayer. And it takes place 10 years. So it's like in 2010, 2011, maybe 2013. Okay. And they go to another dimension to help Cordelia, the vampire slayer. And yeah, because Buffy never arrived. And it was actually Cordelia who was called. And she's the Slayer, and Anya's still alive. Tara's still alive.
But is Anya still a demon?
No, she's just a witch. Like, she still ended up being a witch or a human, but she's a witch now in the other dimension, and she still runs the magic shop. And
that
yeah,
is
there's a whole.
So
it's a good story, and it was really cool how they did this spinoff, and a lot of stuff could happen in between those and after that, and. I think they're going to make a second one. So I highly recommend getting Audible to listen to it.
I mean, if we're now recommending other properties, there's another book called Slayer. It's by Kirsten White. And there's two books so far in the series. Buffy is still alive, and she manages to like destroy, like get rid of all magic by destroying something. And so the protagonist of this series is literally the last chosen slayer, the last, you know, slayer that's possible. There are no other slayers. And so now she's like living with watchers, and her whole life was to be a watcher, but now she's a slayer. It's very fascinating. A little YA, It's set in Ireland, I believe, or or the UK. It was really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's very fascinating that like all these other properties are coming out of this beloved show that is. Yeah.
It's very like Star Wars, Star Trek fiction type thing where you're like, is anything going to be canon? What's going to be canon? Are they even, because, you know, they came out with comics. It was Buffy season 8, season 9, season 10. And I got all of season 8 and like the first one of season 9. And then that's when I was buying them like $50 each, like a volume of them. It was a library edition.
I have the library editions for some of them too.
I tried to get volume 2 of season 9. It's like $250. And I'm like, I guess I'm stopping here.
Impossible to find.
So if I come into money one day, I might get it, but we'll see. But what's funny is that at the end of season 8, the same thing happened. Like magic was gone and basically the universe rebooted. And the only magic that was around was what was already left. Like what was left. So there would be no new vampires, no new witches, no, you know, that kind of thing. No new slayers.
I think that's what this is then taking off from.
It's probably, yeah, spun off from that idea. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we're divulging.
We're going down the Buffy hole.
So. We're going down the Buffy. But
that sounds bad too.
Sounds really dirty. I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
No, I don't think so.
Great. Let's get into Sharp and Flat, shall we?
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. And since this is the second chance of this, we're going to see if I agree with my former sharps and flats. So Dustin, I'm going to give you the floor. You can start with whatever you want and end with whatever you want. So, okay. Go.
I have a few sharps. So, okay. For me, the sharps in this episode, I love, like you said, the influences from other movies and whatnot. Like you were talking about the Gene Kelly thing. And I love the Disney influences, even just the visuals. Like the part of your world, Little Mermaid moment when she's singing, I just want to be alive. And then the vampire explodes in front of her. Like it's the wave, you know, coming up in front of Ariel. And then of course I love when Sweet shows up and sings What You Feel, but it's like, you ain't never had a friend like me with all the different things dropping out. His suit changes. It's very much like the evil genie. You know what I mean? Like I always thought that was cool. I was like, yeah, this is definitely influenced by some Disney as well. I mean, not just old school movie musicals, but also, you know.
Oh yeah. No, there's a list that I found on IMDb where they're like, that is a Menken style. Like they were inspired by Menken. They were inspired by obviously rock music for Spike. Yes.
Well, because of Billy Idol, you know, you had to do something like that.
Billy Idol. And because Anthony Head sang earlier in the show, they understood, I think Joss understood his singing voice more. So they gave him that style for standing.
Right. Yeah.
Which, by the way, standing the slow-mo in that will never not be funny.
Oh, it's great. It's great. You know, they did such a good job. But, you know what makes me mad? Okay, I'm kind of sidebarring a little bit about the Anthony Stewart Head thing. So I was watching something and somebody, I think it was the 20th or the 20th? Maybe 30th anniversary or 40th. Damn, I don't even know. Of Rocky Horror, the Rocky Horror Show, not just Rocky Horror Picture Show.
But yeah. Pictures.
And he came out and did Sweet Transvestite. You know, it was on VH1 and dressed to the whole Frankenfurter Nuns, you know, and did a great job. And somebody was like, I didn't know he could swing. Did you sing? How did you know that Giles could sing? I was like, did you watch Buffy? Did you watch it at all? This was like years after all of this. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? You know that he's Giles. Did you watch the show? It makes me so mad. A couple people have done that to me. I'm like, yeah. And I look at him like, you're freaking stupid. And they look
yeah,
at me like,
here's
what?
Here's a whole movie called Repo the Genetic Opera.
It's not a good movie, but it's there. he can perform. That's all I can say. He can perform. He's not saying it's the best movie in the world or anything, but
What other sharps do you have?
I want to commend Sarah Michelle Gellar for really owning her non-strong singing abilities. She worked hard at it. She could carry a tune at least. And yes, her performance came off great. But you know what? I don't think, even if she could sing, I don't think Buffy could sing. That's not Buffy's strong suit. It's just, you know what I mean? Like, that's, Buffy is muscle. She's, you know, I think in general, like, she wouldn't be able to sing, you know? And by the way, random thing popped in my head. We were talking about Charisma Carpenter. She did try to sing in an episode, singing "The Greatest Love of All." And she was doing like a pageant thing for the talent show.
Oh my God, yes. Oh,
so
yeah.
That just popped in
but
my
that,
head.
But that may have been
purposely bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
I don't
like
know.
A,
it might
like
be
a
real.
Tina is sometimes bad in Glee, but
yeah.
Jenna Ushkowitz is a songbird.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But still, but yeah, back to Sarah Michelle Gellar. Her performance came off great. It felt like what Buffy should sound like trying to sing, you know? And I think that was great.
I commend all these actors because a lot of them are not singers. A lot of them know their limitations.
Or
but
dancers.
Like, or dancers. Where I was rewatching it, and that ballet moment felt a little messy.
Like, oh, with Dawn?
Yeah.
Well, that was the best she could do, probably. I think she was in dance classes, but I mean, she was a kid. She was like 15 or 16.
But I don't know. Because, like, a show like this is hard. Because obviously there's fight choreography that's happening, and even that sometimes looks a little messy and hokey.
Yeah, upon rewatch, especially when you're really paying attention, you're like,
right.
Oh, that's not Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Right. So
that's not David Boreanaz, you know, that kind of thing. That's always fun.
So it's like, okay, did you have enough time to clean it up?
Well,
I'm not blaming Michelle Trachtenberg. I'm saying maybe they didn't schedule enough time.
And I don't think they did, because they filmed this while filming other episodes throughout this early part of the season, because they had so much to film for this. So a lot of this was probably, it was just her and the choreographers and that, and then a camera crew, and they're, all right, you go do this at the bronze thing. We're filming this over here for now, but you're filming your part of this dance thing, and we got to do it really quick. You got to learn it today and do it. You know, it might've been something like that. And where it's like, okay, well, it was as good as it was going to get, you know, that kind of thing. So, but I still think it worked well. And like you said, yeah, they worked really hard because, like, you know, they were doing it. I mean, can you imagine, like, learning your lines for this episode completely opposite, and then learning your songs and your dance numbers and your lines for this other episode that you're filming at the exact same time? Oh, that would just be a nightmare.
Right. Like, this probably was a rough filming schedule for them, until then they were like, okay, now we did the musical episode and we're gonna balance everything else out.
Yeah, now we're just gonna take a long break, thanks.
yeah Willow, you get to play pretend like you're stoned, good luck.
Bye. That would have been fun, you know. It's always good to play the bad guy, you know, that's what everybody always says. It's always
so
fun to play the bad guy, so when you get to do it, yeah, of course you're like, all right, you know.
Also, I was reading that they were going to dub Sarah Michelle Gellar, like she was going to have a singing voice, and she's like,
mm-hmm.
"No, this is no. I will."
Well, yeah, I mean, because she's like, you know, I know I can't really sing that great, but I'm going to work hard on it. And she took voice lessons and she did everything she could.
I thought she
did
a good job.
I think she did great. I mean, I mean, she's not a big belter or anything, but she carried the tune,
like,
and it was sounded good.
And like you said, I am now agreeing with you. Buffy as a character wouldn't be the strongest singer, because, like, that is not her forte. Even if there's a magical spell that's happening where everyone busts out into song and dance, like, I would assume that she's a better dancer than she is a singer, which Sarah Michelle Gellar was. Her choreography in Something to Sing About was fantastic, and I believed her as a dancer more than a singer, is all I'm saying.
Right. And she's used to that because she's used to fight choreography. So it's not too different, you know? So, I mean, I'm sure there's more toe pointing and, you know, precision probably, but you know, the difference, you know, but like the other, you can totally see Anya being a good singer because she's just got that personality. She's got that, you know what I mean?
Right.
The way and she presents herself. And even Tara, you can kind of see her being like the subtle folksy singer that she is. Because she's so quiet and meek, but there's something underlying there that you see it bubbling up, like in the episode previous to this, when she and, you know, Willow get into the fight and Willow does the, you know, forget this fight ever happened. But see, Tara was showing that she's not this meek person. She's like, you need to chill out with the magic. Like, she puts her foot down and Willow doesn't like it. And because Tara's not meek anymore, Tara has grown more confident. And you're like, so you totally believe that she can sing the way she can, you know?
I feel like Tara is the type of person that hums while she cooks or something like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, while she's reading.
I thought you were
going to
say peas. I don't know why I thought you were going
to
say peas.
No. Well, she's one of those people who just hums while doing something else.
Yeah. She's the type, you know, I do this too. Like, just, you know, she has her animals at home and she sings them little songs when she's, you know, in real life, you know, probably as well. And, you know,
yeah,
I think
she's watering the plants
that
and she's like,
Miss Kitty.
Drink,
she's like, Miss Kitty, it's so pretty, going to feed you some gritty, you know, and like,
yeah, but a little more, like, but a little more folky.
Yeah.
Do you have any other sharps?
One last one, which you're not going to like, but I'm still going to say it. Even though, like I said, we don't love Joss Whedon, I still give him props because he did learn piano and learn how to write some sheet music because he really wanted to do this episode. He went and learned all that crap. And that's probably why it took so long for it to come out. One of the reasons, which is actually perfect. So I have to respect him for that. And even though I don't like him as a person, I have to respect that work that was put in.
I'm going to agree with you on that sentiment where you're like, I will respect you for the work, the hard work you've put into this. The fact that you wrote all of these songs and the episode is astounding. You're still a bad man.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have to the reason why I respect it, because he was like, no, this is, I want to do this. This is my show. I want to create this way, the way I want it to go. So I need to learn how to do some freaking music. I mean, obviously he had help for the orchestration part of it all, but
of course, yes,
but the melody and the lyrics and whatnot, you know, he probably came up with all that, and this is the style I want, and this is what I want to be influenced by, so he got his people to work with him on it, you know, and mm-hmm. which totally works, you know, that's fine, that's collaboration, that's what you do. So, but yeah, I have to hand it to him on that, you know, and as much as of a dickhead he is, it's very obvious he is, because he has not been around much longer, you know, like ever since all this the harsh treatment of his performers has come out, it's very obvious he has not done a thing. You have not heard anything for him. He's not getting hired. You don't hear anything like he's creating anything new. No one cares. You're like, we're done. We don't want to hear anything
that's
to do
good.
With
and we're learning as a society.
We're reaping, you know, you reap what you sow, you know. Don't be, I mean, there's a difference between having a bad day and like cutting somebody down and then doing it repeatedly in an abusive way at work. You know, there's a difference, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like sometimes everybody has a bad day. But like for it to be a repeated thing over and over enough to where people don't want to work with you because they're afraid of how you're going to act every day, you know, that's not cool.
Do you have any
flats?
That's
a flat. That one is a flat.
Joss Whedon is a flat, but Joss Whedon's work into this episode is a sharp.
Is totally sharp.
Yes.
Yeah, I do have flats. So like I said before, even though we know his name is Sweet, it is not uttered at all in this entire episode. And the only reason why we know his name is Sweet is because of the press and social media around the show. That is it. That's the only reason we know that character's name. Oh, and then like it's written in books, you know, and I think it was in the musical episode book. It was written as Sweet. But I'm like, why did you give him a name if you're not going to say the name?
Right. I'm like, hoping that there was a scene that was just cut out.
From what I remember, the script book, it had like a couple extra lines, but it had nothing else.
There was no, like, I found him, I found the demon in this book.
This is the mark of Sweet. No, I don't know. Like, I have
no
idea.
We're looking for the Sweet's charm.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it was. They never went in anywhere with that. I thought that was really stupid.
It's also really weird that it's Xander that does the spell.
And that's my second flat. That's my second flat. He didn't get into enough trouble.
No.
People died. Yeah. And they just kind of went, eh. Yes, Willow kills somebody, but they bring that up constantly to her. Hey, and she's still working on herself. And they bring it up to her, and they keep bringing it up. Xander got a guy, at least one guy. We see him die.
Two.
At least. Two? Oh, there is two. Well, no.
Well, there's the one guy that we see that Giles talks about, but I'm not sure if that's the same person that Sweet brings up in his song.
That might just be a glamour as well, because it disappears as well. So,
but I wasn't sure if maybe a second person died, or if that's the same businessman, the tap dancing businessman that we see set get set on fire that Giles references.
We definitely know there's at least one. There might be two. So.
And there's about to be another one with Buffy.
Right. And she starts smoking. So I'm like, you almost got your friend killed. I mean, Buffy, I can understand she's been going through the crap, going through the motions. But like everybody else, you'd be like, you almost killed her, Xander. We just brought her back from the dead. You almost killed her. Like, he's like, I didn't know it was going to happen. And you're like, somebody hit him,
read
please.
You know by now to read the fine print.
Like,
you
he should have been now. Made to go through the same kind of crap that Willow did. Maybe not as bad. Obviously, go through some kind of witch course. Like, this is what we don't do with talismans. We don't look up things to benefit our lives. Right. Because that's not what magic is for. Yeah, they should have been a whole thing about that. They just completely... But a lot of people also point out that Xander is supposedly, or from what we've been told by Joss Whedon, it's modeled after him.
Yes.
So, of course, he wouldn't get in trouble.
But also, rewatching it, Xander's not the best character.
No, ever. And you're like, and he's always making these, and you're like, if that's Joss Whedon, I hate him.
I think, I want to say by this point in the show, I think this is the time that everyone is like Team Xander, because this is he's now an adult and he is working, and I feel like this is when people are like, oh,
he still does crappy things, like leaving Anya at the altar and whatnot. But season 7 is the best Xander.
Right, but he's not like high school Xander, where he's still in love with Buffy and is like, forgets to tell her that they're going to do the spell to give Angel his soul back.
Or, yeah, he forgot, quotes. He knew, but yeah, and like, you know, or out of jealousy, or just the misogynistic comments or the homophobic comments and, you know, stuff like you're like, and then later on you're like, this episode even had one. Does it mean I have to be your queen?
The gay panic. Like, yeah.
Chill out, Xander. Like,
do you have any other flats?
Yes. I have two more. Okay. So I'm mad that, Allison Hannigan didn't get more sing time. I know she's not a big singer. I get it. She could have talk sung more. They could have given her a freaking rap. I know.
Could have given her a Nancy Sinatra moment. Yeah.
I mean, or what was that? Debbie Harry, you know.
Debbie Harry does sing.
But she does rap, too.
You know, that's true. But Nancy Sinatra spoke her way to a number one song.
They could have done something. They could have given her a little bit more. They could have figured, or given her a dance. You know, she's on freaking Dancing with the Stars. She can obviously move, and she stayed on for a while. So, I mean, I don't know who won, but she may have. I don't know. But obviously, she could have danced or something, you know, but they didn't have her do anything. I'm like, you got off easy, Allison Hannigan. I can't do it. You know, okay.
Well, this one episode, she then has to carry the rest of the season.
That's true. But yeah, that's probably her punishment from Joss Whedon. Knowing how vindictive he is, he's like, you know what? We're going to make Willow go through hell then.
you know what? We're going to make Willow eat out Tara and in this episode, but then we're going to have her go through emotional hell. You're welcome, everyone.
I know. Like, oh my God, they literally do it. Like, wow. And that era, you're like, we know what's happening. We don't see it. We know what's happening.
You make me complete.
Yeah. And I'm floating because I'm orgasming on magical.
With anticipation.
Exactly. That's exactly what that is. So, and my next flat is I really think that they missed the opportunity to make a sequel episode to this. I think there could have been a sequel episode. They only hinted at it with that one episode with Anya's flashback in season 7.
I love that, yes.
And it's called I'm the Mrs. And she sings this whole thing. And also, it's kind of a pre, it's not, it's kind of a prequel to the Buffy to Once More with Feeling. Actually, it's like the night before, like the same time that's happening to Buffy for the first time. I think that's when that's happening, because when she's singing it, or right before, either before or after she sings, she's on the balcony outside of Xander's apartment, and you hear the guy in the background singing about getting mustard on his shirt. And I'm like, oh my god, because I just rewatched it. I was like, holy crap, I never noticed that before.
I don't know if I agree with you with this flat about having a sequel musical episode, because I think this is
it's perfect as is, but they could have done something more, or done a different, you know what I mean? I just wanted more.
Yeah, oh, of course.
You know, they could have had more flashbacks, or, you know what I mean, or just like what you didn't see, you know, another, some more, right, what you didn't see, what, you know, kind of thing, or
other sliding door moments of like, what,
Giles sitting in his hotel room with the back room, with the room service chaps dancing, you know, and stuff like that, you know, or that big Chiraro demon making like Yuna Sumac. I want to see it. Come on.
The other Slayers that are in season 7, like, what happened to them when we got, like, if we can get a flashback of them singing, that would have been cool.
Exactly. What was really neat, by the way, because I was just, like, I was talking about those books I was reading, is One Girl in All the World, the second book, with Willow's daughter. They had this thing where there's a villain that puts a beacon on the Hellmouth that draws forth other monsters that had already been there before. So it's like Buffy's greatest hits of monsters coming back in the book. So like the gentleman and the fish from Go Fish, and like, where, you know, hellhounds and stuff like that, all these different things. And I think at some point something is said about Sweet, or the musical demon, at one point in the book too. So
interesting.
Yeah, it was really, it was like, oh, you know, I don't know if they didn't actually sing or anything. They just talk about it. But yeah, that's all my flats.
Okay. So does John agree with his former sharps and flats? Yes, but I want to retract one of them. I initially gave Dawn a flat, and after like some self-realizing and listening to other people talk about her, I feel like at least in this season, she mellows out than last season being the key. Because last season when she's like, I'm just a key, I'm like, girl, like.
I mean, but you had to, when you I just rewatched that whole season. I was like, I understand it more.
And yes. Yeah, but also it's just like, you're not just a key. I mean, in season 5, you're not a, there, I'm just thinking of that one moment where she tries to self-harm, and she's like, what is this? Is this even real? And I'm like, yes. You're real. They made you real. Like, anyway, I'm still having a mixed bag of feelings, but I want to retract my flat to her, because at least in this episode, she's fine.
Season 6, she is less problematic, less whiny. She's still whiny, but she's like, Buffy, why? It's more like that kind of whiny, you know, like, why aren't you want to be around me, Buffy? Why? You know,
I'm stealing. Man.
Yeah. Yeah. But season 7 is where Dawn is pretty freaking awesome.
It's like the best for everybody.
Yeah, it is. It's the best for everybody. Everybody's freaking awesome. Their characters are on it. And yeah. I don't like where they take her in the comics, but you know, whatever.
But I have new sharps. I also sharped that moment in Going Through the Motions, the ending, where the dust, because it's very, it, like you said, it's the waves during part of your world. It's the, but like in the best way Buffy can do things. I also want to sharp the whole scene with Giles, Xander, and Anya walking down the street, because it's world building, but you're following our regulars.
Right. In a continuous shot. It's a pretty,
And I love continuous long takes like that. I'm a sucker for those, but like, it's almost like their conversation is important, but also not important, because the world is still turning.
Right. So I love that. And that's, I get that too, because it's like, I mean, different times I'm either listening to what they're saying or I'm watching what's going on behind them.
But also it's showing you, it's one of the very rare moments in a show. I want to say, I want to, like, any show where you're seeing their story happening, but also, like, it's not really important in this one moment.
It could be missed, and the scene could be missed and you wouldn't be lost, that kind of thing. Yeah. Right. Or whatever. That's what I was saying. Like, so the first time I watched it, I was watching them listening to what they're saying, but then, like, I kept noticing things in the background and I realized I was missing what they were saying. And when I watched it the second time, I was like, pay attention to what the hell they're saying. And I was like, oh, okay, that's funny. And I missed a lot because there was so much going on. But it was okay, like you're saying, because you could watch the background or you could watch the foreground. And either way, you're still getting something new when you watch it again and you get more information. But at the same time, you're not really missing that information because they wrote it in a way where it's kind of like, hey, we're showing you this because we want you to know it's happening to everybody. You know
what this one scene is like? To tie it into Pink Ladies again, this one scene is like the boys episode in Pink Ladies, where okay. We focus on Richie and all of them. Because, like, it's rare, like, what I'm saying, it's, like, rare in shows where you're focused on other characters besides, like, the main ones.
Yeah.
And although, yes, in Pink Ladies, it's an ensemble show, but, like, this is the one moment where you're seeing other perspectives. Like, we had Hazel's perspective of the show, and now we're getting Buddy's perspective of them doing Romeo and Juliet, mm-hmm. and getting answers to why things happen. So in this scene, the sidewalk scene, like, we're understanding that it's not just them for once. This is a thing that's affecting all of Sunnydale, and it's very powerful, I feel like. As a fan, I'm liking that it's part humor, but also very, like, layered in a way.
Yeah. And you know what I just thought of? So I know that the street sweepers are the same three henchmen. I know that, yes, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
What's funny, though, is, like, so I know it's the same actors. Are they the same people?
Oh!
Because what if the street sweepers in the background are just kind of keeping eyes on our main characters?
That's an interesting take.
Glamour to look like regular guys, you know, like, why are there street sweepers in Sunnydale? Like,
or Sweet turned them into his henchmen.
That's true too. Those three could have been regular guys turned into, like, the puppet looking henchmen, or it could have been puppet making henchmen that Sweet was like, hey, go spy on these guys. Here's some glamour. Because he can do that, obviously.
Because Sweet doesn't show up until the end of Act One, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he never leaves the Bronze either. He just hangs out at the Bronze.
I also have one more new sharp, and it's Anya and Tara being Buffy's backup, but, like, the nuance of that joke, oh, where, yeah,
hey, Buffy, Tara, she needs backup.
She, yeah, needs backup. not saying she needs backup singers, backup dancers, it's she needs backup. And, yeah, like, and I believe they've said that before in the show, like, Buffy needs backup or somebody needs backup.
But it's like, it's a double meaning for this episode for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that it's Anya and Tara, because, like, they are
for the better the female singers.
The stronger, yeah, singers, yeah.
Going, ah, winging their hips. And
and I don't have any new flats. So would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist? I listen to this album still.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Like, I would say, obviously, Going Through the Motions. Totally. That's just one of those ones. Like, it's so much fun to sing. I just love the silliness of it, but it also is a serious song. She's like, you know, of life just sucks and I don't know how to get through it. And, you know, I've got a theory. That's always a fun one. Uh-huh. I mean, there's some, I mean, I like them all, but at the same time, like, the ones I want to sing over and over, like, I'll sing I'll Never Tell. I love that one, you know? And What You Feel, man, not that really, but Walk Through the Fire. That's the one, the whole, we're going to battle and everybody's singing their own little things and it's all crossing over each other. And, oh, I love that one, you know, and when the freaking when they say burn and the freaking fire truck comes in behind them, yeah. It's like perfect. And you're like, oh, how did they plan that? It's so perfect, you know? And I love that song. I think that's probably my favorite. And then of course, Something to Sing About and Where Do We Go From Here? Yeah.
My favorite song is none of those. I love all of them, but my favorite song is Under Your Spell Standing Reprise. I love that it's Tara and
Miles.
They're reprising their songs. It's beautiful because you have these two people who are singing in their own little worlds, and then across the magic shop you have Buffy and Willow, who the other people are singing to, and it's also like the the dual harmonies that are happening, mm-hmm. or the melody lines, and it's beautiful. I love it.
And I love it. I love that and Standing. The reprise of Standing. Both, neither people can hear them singing.
Right.
Yeah. They can't hear them.
It's the one true heart song in this.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But Justin, on that note, we're done with the episode.
Oh no.
I know. But you'll be back, don't worry.
Okay, cool.
You'll be back. I think you sent me some things that we're gonna do. I don't remember. I'll look at it later. But what do you have to plug or promote?
Well, both my podcasts are coming back. Dustin Can Read and Watch is back already.
This is coming out in March.
Okay.
Very, very in the future. So
okay, we'll do this. Well, they are back. At this point, they're back. Dustin Green Watch is now also on YouTube. I'm starting to, at least one episode a month will be on YouTube. I'm going to do some extras as well.
Oh, and that's nice.
The Rewatch Recap is going through the second season of The Magicians right now. So we're going to be starting that. It starts in January, which obviously this is March. So we'll be finishing it out in early May, I think, probably the end of this season two.
See, that show, everything bleeds together for me because it feels like it's just one continuous story, which is good, what shows should be. But is season two when they're in fillery the whole time?
Season two, they go back and forth, yes. Well, that's from the end of season one on. They're back. Well, excuse me, I hit my mic. Season one, at the end of season one on, they're in fillery on and off.
What's the big thing that happens in season two?
Season two is where they will finally kill the beast.
Yes.
Alex turns into a Niffin. And, yes. Elliot is now king and trying to figure that out and whatnot. Season three is where we finally get the musical episodes and stuff like that. So
season three is the keys, right?
Yes.
Yes.
The magical keys. Yeah. And so that's where we're at. We're in season two of that. And then we'll be going into Ghost Rider and Dante's Cove. So that's going to be a really fun season this year. So Dante's Cove, I'm hoping to do it at the end of May and leading up into Pride Month. So that'll be kind of my goal for that.
I'm ready whenever you need a guest for anything. I will talk about whatever.
that sounds good. So that would have been fun, have a musical episode of Ghost Rider.
But that was during the scary time because it's post Cop Rock.
True.
But it's a kids show, so like they could get away with it, question mark.
Oh, they totally could. And then it would be like an excuse for Ghost Rider to have a voice at some point.
Ghost Rider is very made a lot of sounds, so it made sense. It would, in your logic, it would make sense if Ghost Rider is like the musical accompaniment or something.
Or the backing orchestra. Yeah. But anyway,
beatboxing. But if you have any more, sequel books or continuation books to recommend on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I'd love to hear about them. You can email
me. I'll
totally
let you know. For sure. Yeah. I will.
You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok @buttersongpod. What is you, the listener, what is your favorite song from this episode? I'd love to hear it, but maybe I'll start a poll or something. I don't know. And if you want to be a part of next episode's conversation while we're continuing Second Chance Month, it's unfortunately the last episode of the month, of the Second Chance Month, and it is Anna and the Apocalypse.
Oh, okay. I never have actually seen that. I keep meaning to. It's like on my to watch thing, but I hate zombies. I really do.
But it's a musical Christmas zombie movie.
I know. I just really hate zombies. You just don't understand how much I really hate them. Like, not in the way like, oh, I love to hate them. No, I hate zombies. I have nightmares about zombies. I hate them. So, it takes a lot for me to get into it. So, I mean, I've watched Shaun of the Dead, and I'm okay with Shaun of the Dead. So, I'll try to sit through it, but I'd rather watch it with somebody.
There you go. Make it a date night. Well, Dustin, thank you so much for coming back on. You'll be back soon. Well, I don't remember when.
We'll
do it again soon. And thank you everyone for listening, and bye for now.
Bye, everybody.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.